It's time for question time, and I think Senator Gallagher has the call.
Thank you, President. I seek leave to make a statement concerning ministerial arrangements.
Is leave granted?
Yeah.
Leave is granted.
Thank you. I advise changes to ministerial arrangements. Senator Wong will be absent from question time this week for personal reasons, and Senator Farrell will be absent from question time this week on account of ministerial business overseas. In the absence of Senator Wong and Senator Farrell, I will be the acting leader of the government in the Senate, and ministers will represent portfolios at question time in accordance with the letter circulated to the President and party leaders and independent senators.
Thank you, Senator Gallagher. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Gallagher. On 16 February, the Australian Border Force issued a media release entitled ABF Operation in Western Australia in response to media reports that at least one illegal venture had arrived near Beagle Bay. Ministers have since publicly acknowledged the arrival of a vessel. Will the Minister confirm when this illegal venture arrived, how many boats there were, and how many illegal maritime arrivals were on board?
Order. Senator Watt, Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Patterson for the question. We won't be commenting on operational matters or seeking to politicise national security and border protection, unlike those opposite. We're not going to assist the people smuggling business. We have a large border, as everyone knows, and so boat arrivals do happen from time to time, and we saw that under your government, Senator Patterson.
Exactly.
We had a very similar situation to what recently occurred in WA in Queensland.
Yep.
And what is critical is that Operation Sovereign Borders remains in place, and the good and capable and qualified staff who are in operating Operation Sovereign Borders are doing their job, and that's what we in this parliament should expect them to do. We don't want to politicise it. I know those opposite do, and I would draw Senator's attention to the comments of Rear Admiral Brett Sonter, who said the mission of Operation Sovereign Borders remains the same today as when it was established in 2013 to protect Australia's borders, combat people smuggling in our region, and importantly prevent people from risking their lives at sea. Any alternate narrative will be exploited by criminal people smugglers to deceive potential irregular immigrants and convince them to risk their lives and travel to Australia by boat. So I think all senators should be assured that Operation Sovereign Borders is working when there is a boat arrival. Those who might make it onto mainland Australia are removed from the country. They will not be resettled in this country, and the policy remains the same as it was under the former government.
Yeah.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Patterson, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. When asked about Labor's position on border protection on the 26th of April 2022, the Prime Minister, then opposition leader, said, "The same policy that exists now, Operation Sovereign Borders, will apply under us." Can the Minister confirm that it is the government's intention to abolish temporary protection visas, a core pillar of Operation Sovereign Borders?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I thank Senator Patterson for the question. The policy of Operation Sovereign Borders hasn't changed. It remains in place. The same policy that the former government had remains the policy of this government, and it is working. It's protecting borders, it's combating people smuggling, and it's preventing lives being lost at sea. And where we do have a boat arrive, as we saw in the last week or so, those people are removed from this country and they will not resettle in this country. But we are fixing up a broken immigration system.
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. The question was about Labor's commitment to abolish temporary protection visas. The Minister has not mentioned the word temporary protection visas or even attempted to answer the question.
Senator Patterson, there was an opening statement by you on that, and the Minister is responding appropriately. Minister Gallagher.
Yeah, thank you. Well, as I said, Operation Sovereign Borders policy architecture remains unchanged. And again, I would remind those who seek to politicise this issue, as we understand the opposition always seeks to do, it's their default position, The comments from the commander of the Joint Agency Task Force of Operation Sovereign Borders, which says that any alternative narrative will be exploited by others.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Patterson, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. At least 311 illegal maritime arrivals have now come to Australia on at least 12 boats since you were elected. Will the Albanese government commit to restoring all pillars of Operation Sovereign Borders, including temporary protection visas?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Gallagher.
Yes, so I don't think Senator Patterson has heard what the Commander of Joint Agency Task Force Operation Sovereign Borders, Rear Admiral Brett Sonta, has actually said, or maybe he has heard it and he wants to just willfully ignore it. The mission of Operation Sovereign Borders remains the same today as it was when it was established in 2013. Protect Australian borders, combat people smuggling in our region and, importantly, prevent people from risking their lives at sea. Any alternate narrative, that being peddled by you, Senator Patterson, which is my inclusion in that, so it's not part of the quote, will be exploited by criminal people smugglers to deceive potential irregular immigrants and convince them to risk their lives and travel to Australia by boat.
Give us another alternative. Senator Patterson.
Again, Madam President, the question was about temporary protection visas. The Minister has not approached temporary protection visas in her answer.
Temporary protection visas were part of the question, but it also went to the whole issue around Australia's border, and the minister is being relevant. Minister, did you wish to continue?
Well, just to reconfirm for the chamber that Operation Sovereign Borders policy architecture remains unchanged, despite those opposite who would like to run a narrative to the contrary so that those overseas watching this space will see that alternate narrative that Rear Admiral Brett Sonta talked about.
Thank you, Minister.
You are the one
time
stirring
for answering
up.
Has expired. Senator Sheldon.
My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. A key platform with the Albanese Labor government was to get wages moving again. Minister, could you outline how the government's policies since taking office have contributed to the return of real wages growth? And how does this help address the cost of living pressures Australians are experiencing?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. And I thank Senator Sheldon for the question and acknowledge his career in advocating for working people across this country and ensuring that they get a fair wages growth for the work that they do. We said we'd get wages moving again, and we are. Real wages growth is back and ahead of schedule. Because the Albanese government wants people to earn more and keep more of what they earn. Annual real wage growth grew at the end of last year for the first time in almost 3 years. And for the first time since 2018, we've seen three consecutive quarters of real wages growth. Since the election, nominal wages have been growing at an annualised average of 4% compared to 2.2% under the Liberal government. This is a substantial turnaround in just 18 months. It means real wages growth returned faster than forecast by Treasury at the end of 2023, rather than at the beginning of 2024. And stronger wages growth is a result of the government's policies to lift wages for workers, including our support for record increases to the minimum wage, which has increased by $110 a week under Labor. A 5.75% pay rise for workers on awards in 2023 and 4.6% in 2022, the highest ever pay rise for aged care workers who had long argued the case for better wages, a 15% wage increase. It took a Labor government to deliver that. And significant investments in new industries to create secure, well-paid jobs. We are improving job security and pay equity for Australian women, and the gender pay gap has fallen to a record low of 12%. Last week's new numbers are very welcome, but we know that people are still under pressure, which is why Labor's cost of living tax cuts are so important when they pass the Senate later this week.
Thank you, Minister. Before I call Senator Sheldon, I acknowledge in the gallery former Senator Williams. Welcome. Senator Sheldon, first supplementary.
I'd like to say hello to Wacker Williams as well, but how does a rise in real wages work in concert with the government's other targeted cost of living relief measures, including Labor's tax cuts plan that will deliver all Australians who pay tax a tax cut from July the 1st?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Sheldon for The question, I also acknowledge Waka in the gallery, and I'm sure he's been missing us very much. Under the Albanese Labor government, there are more people in jobs, they're earning more, and with our tax plan, they'll keep more of what they earn. Labor's tax cuts will deliver a tax cut for every Australian taxpayer. That's 13.6 million people. Labor's tax cut will deliver a bigger tax cut for middle Australia to help with the cost of living. This builds on our other measures to target cost of living relief while not adding to inflation. Despite opposition from the Liberals and Nationals, we've already delivered electricity bill relief, we've made medicines cheaper, we're making it easier and cheaper to see a doctor, cheaper childcare, expanding parental leave, building more social and affordable homes and increasing rent assistance, fee-free TAFE. All of these measures that we've received opposition from those opposite.
Senator Sheldon, second supplementary.
Given the government's targeted cost of living measures, including cheaper childcare, cheaper medicines, pay rises for aged care workers and tax cuts, could the minister elaborate on how these initiatives are not only aimed at reducing cost of living pressures on Australians, but also to secure sustainable wage growth for working people?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Sheldon for the question, and it's an important one because it goes to how can we make sure that people are earning more for the work that they do. And for too long under the former government, workers weren't getting a fair wage increase. We saw wages stagnate. We saw annual wages growth of around 2%. In the public sector, it was in the order of about 1.2% over the decade. And so they were falling behind. And what we've done in the first 18 months is support those cost of living measures, which don't add to inflation, but also put in place the architecture to make sure that workers are getting a fair pay rise. We've helped, our cost of living policies have helped deliver that sooner because our policies have helped put downward pressure on inflation, and we saw that in the ABS data. And because we're putting downward pressure on inflation, we've seen that those good wages figures in the last week. But we know people are under pressure, which is why we remain focused on the job at hand, which is to ease cost of living pressures on the Australian community.
Thank you, Minister.
Community.
Senator Cash.
Thank you. And my question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Gallagher. At Senate estimates earlier this month, the Department of Home Affairs gave evidence that at least 18 individuals released from immigration detention as a result of the NZYQ High Court decision have been charged by state and territory police, and at least 7 individuals have been charged for breaching their visa conditions. How many of the 149 non-citizens released from immigration detention as a result of the NZYQ case are currently in custody?
Thank you, Senator Cash. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Cash for the question and note the continued politicisation of a ruling of the High Court. The High Court ruled that indefinite detention was unconstitutional and it upended 2 decades of legal precedent. And this opposition have taken every single opportunity to play politics with this issue. As we have gotten on, focused on keeping the community safe, focused on putting in place arrangements to keep monitoring and keeping an eye on those that have been released.
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Senator Cash.
The point of order is in relation to relevance, and far from politicising the issue, the question was how many of the 149 non-citizens are currently in custody?
Thank you, Senator Cash, and there was significant preamble which went to the matters the Minister is addressing. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. Well, these matters are being managed by the AFP and State and Territory Police Forces, as Senator Cash knows. We are not making comment on individual matters. Where an offence occurs or charges are laid, they are reported in the normal way, as you would expect, whether that would be through the state and territory police forces or through the AFP. All individuals know that's
order.
Not true. I'll take the interjection. I'll take the interjection. All individuals are being monitored, and as you were told at estimates, as no, that is not true, Senator Cash. If you want to perpetuate myths and mistruths to pay politics, that's on your head. The officials, our police who are in charge, our Home Affairs staff who are in charge, are doing the job that we have asked them to do, as they should do. They are the experts. They are in charge. They are managing this situation. They are keeping the government briefed. They are providing information where it is required. And you've just had a whole week of estimates to investigate this yourself, where you were given a range of evidence. But I am very confident that the work that the AFP and the ABF, along with their state and territory counterparts, are doing the job
Thank
that
you,
they
Minister.
Need to do,
the time
keeping
for
the community
answering
safe.
Has expired. Senator Cash, first supplementary.
Thank you. And the Department of Home Affairs admitted at Senate estimates that the government has not made a single application for preventative detention relating to individuals released under the NZYQ decision, despite the parliament rushing the legislation through before Christmas at the government's urging. Can the minister confirm that the number of applications is still zero?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Cash for the question. I can confirm that the ABF and the AFP are doing everything that we have asked them to do in the laws that have passed this place to keep the community safe. And as I would remind those, it took, I
Order.
Think, 3 years
Order.
Under Harto, 3 years
Order.
Under Harto, to put a case before the courts, a successful case. And so the officials will do the work that they need to do. They have been working on this day and night. You are
Minister,
the ones that
Minister
are trying
Gallagher,
to play politics and undermine...
Senator Cash.
Again, the point of order is in relation to relevance. The question was in relation to the government making application for preventative detention, not officials, and the minister confirming that the number of applications made by the government is still zero. It is a simple yes or no. Is it zero or not?
Thank you, Senator Cash. I believe the minister is being relevant, and I will continue to listen carefully to her response.
It's more of a debating point from Senator Cash. Yes, it was. It was. You make your point. The government's preventative detention and community safety order regime is modelled, as we know, on the Coalition's Harto scheme. And under Harto, it took more than 3 years for the first continuing detention order application. Those opposite would know because they created it. And
thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cash, second supplementary.
Thank you. And the Minister for Home Affairs has repeatedly said that if it were up to her, all of the offenders released as a result of the High Court decision would be in detention. Why has the government not yet made a single application to protect the Australian community from the most dangerous released detainees? Isn't the minister saying one thing but doing another?
Thank you, Senator Cash. Minister Gallagher.
I mind Senator Cash because she seems to have be failing to understand that the High Court made a ruling to rule that indefinite detention was unconstitutional. And since that ruling, the government has been working day and night to keep the community
Senator
safe,
Rustin.
To respond to the law, to follow the decision of the High Court and to keep the community safe. And it is those opposite that are seeking
Minister
to undermine
Gallagher.
That with every
Minister
question
Gallagher,
they
please
ask.
Please resume your seat. Senator Cash.
Thank you. And again, a point of order in relation to relevance. With all due respect to the minister, the last two questions have been in relation to applications for preventative detention. You can hardly say you're keeping the community
Senator
safe
Cash.
If you haven't made
Senator
one
Cash.
Application for preventative
Senator
detention,
Cash.
Can
order.
You?
Order. Senator Cash. Order. I will remind senators, when you make a point of order, you make your point of order, and it is not about then making a statement. I will draw the minister back to the question. Minister.
Thank you. Well, as I'd said, the government is working alongside our security agencies to keep the community safe. And we are implementing the laws that pass this place. And as Senator Patterson said, in 2021, there's a very high legal threshold to be met for a court to agree to the ongoing detention of an offender. We are doing the work. We are implementing the laws that pass this place, and we are keeping the community safe
Cash.
And responding to a broken immigration system that Mr Dutton oversaw on all of your watch.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Cox.
Thank you, President. I rise to ask a question to the Minister representing the Minister for Resources, Minister Watt. 2 weeks ago, the Minister for Resources introduced a bill that would give the Minister the power to bypass environment laws to fast-track climate-destroying gas projects and silence First Nations voices under the guise of worker safety. Why is this government's first legislative act since the Voice referendum to silence the voice of First Nations communities who oppose gas projects in their land and sea country?
Good question.
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Cox. And Senator Cox, I do recognise your long-standing interest in these matters, but I do have to reject the suggestion that the government is attempting to silence First Nations voices through this process. What Minister Madeleine King is doing is putting in place a better, simplified system of regulation of these types of matters that does still provide for consultation processes from a range of different stakeholders, and I have every confidence that this process that you've got an awful lot to say. It's only the first day of the week.
I'm sorry,
Senator Cox, that your own male senators don't let you have an opportunity to ask your questions.
Minister Watt.
But we're used.
I draw you, Minister Watt. I am in charge of the chamber. It's your job to answer the question. So, if you'd like to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, President, for reminding me of standing orders. I do not need to be reminded from time to time. But, Senator Cox, the government has been clear that our environment laws aren't working, either for the environment or for industry. That's why Minister Plibersek is reforming our national environmental laws, and Minister Madeleine King is also leading a process to reform Australia's complex offshore resources environmental laws that was funded in the last budget and will be ongoing and extensive. In relation to this bill, a technical amendment introduced as part of the offshore safety legislation will allow the government to act in line with the recommendations of that review. The review is being undertaken to address widespread concerns regarding the consultation process for offshore
projects.
Minister Watt,
please resume your seat. Senator Cox.
On a point of relevance, President, my question went to the heart of why is this bill seeking to silence the voices of First Nations people. Can the minister please, can you draw the minister?
I think that the minister is being relevant. He's certainly talking about Minister King and the actions in relation to your question, but I'll continue to listen carefully and if necessary I'll draw him to the question, but he is being relevant. Thank you, Minister.
Thanks, President. The bill that's before the parliament does not change the legal requirements for consultation for offshore projects in any way, shape or form. So I understand that it's in the Greens Party's political interests to misrepresent the intention of this legislation and to suggest that people are being excluded, but this bill that's before the parliament does not change the legal requirements for consultation
in any way whatsoever. Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cox, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Just like with the sea dumping bill being introduced on the insistence of Santos, an email from their CEO to the minister released under FOI clearly shows this proposed amendment is silencing First Nations voices and putting our climate at risk at the request of Santos. Minister, are Santos running the minister's office over there?
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. Thank you, Senator Cox. The short answer is no, and of course that's a ridiculous proposition that's being put. As I say, the bill before the parliament does not change the legal requirements for consultation for offshore projects in any way, shape or form. There will be no change to rigorous environmental assessments. No environmental standards will be watered down. There will be no fast track for offshore projects. And the government is consulting on ways to make these consultation processes clearer for offshore resources projects. Indeed, the consultation period has been extended to ensure that everyone can have their say. Environmental organisations, First Nations groups, industry and resources companies have all told us that our system of consultation about projects is not working. So we are happy to work with stakeholders on sensible amendments to the current bill to give everyone further confidence about the intent of the changes.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Cox, second supplement.
Thank you, President. Why is this government so hell-bent on fast-tracking climate-destroying gas projects that you snuck into a worker safety bill while consultation is actually still ongoing? Is it to try and secure a deal with the Coalition in meeting their conditions for passing the PRRT changes that are upcoming?
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Watt.
Yeah, well, the conspiracy theory is flying thick and fast this morning, this afternoon. As I say, the Greens Party may have a political agenda in characterising the government's position in a certain way, and where would they be without trying to characterise our position, because they don't have any positions of their own. But we have made clear that environmental organisations, First Nations groups, industry and resources companies have all told us that our system of consultation about projects is not working. So we are happy, as I say, to work with all stakeholders, whether it be First Nations groups, environmental organisations, industry, the general community. We're happy to work with everyone on sensible amendments to the current bill that give further confidence about the intent of our changes. This government does support the resources industry, the jobs that it creates, the export dollars it creates. We think we can do it in a way that respects First Nations interests and respects the environmental interests at stake here as well.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Green.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, Minister Watt. Strong and sustainable wages growth will deliver an economy that is more productive, competitive and inclusive. Now, we know that low wages was a deliberate design feature of the Liberal and National Party economic policy. What is the Albanese Labor government doing to help workers earn more and keep more of what they earn?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Green. Well, Senator Green, the short answer to your question is we are doing plenty on these matters because, unlike the opposition, the Albanese government wants Australians to earn more and keep more of what they earn. We're not about reducing how much people get paid and making them pay more tax like the opposition. We're about helping Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. From the 1st of July, as a result of the Albanese government's changes, Australian workers will be able to keep more of what they earn with Labor's cost of living tax cuts. Every single taxpayer in Australia will get a tax cut, different to what the Liberals and the Nationals put forward, and middle Australia and low-income earners will get a significantly higher tax cut than what they were going to get under the Morrison-Dutton tax cuts. But we're also helping workers to earn more by boosting job security and wage bargaining, strengthening our award system and closing loopholes that undercut pay and conditions. And Senator Green is right. Low wages were a deliberate design feature of LNP economic policy, and they had the desired effect for the LNP by keeping wages down year after year. But according to data released by the ABS last week, under the Albanese government, real wages growth is back and ahead of schedule. Wages were 4.2% higher through the year, the equal fastest annual growth since 2009. It took a Labor government, the Albanese Labor government, to see real wages growth returning to Australia. This is the first time since 2018 we've seen three consecutive quarters of real wages growth, the highest wage growth in healthcare and social assistance industry in the history of the wage price index. Double the average wage growth under those opposite for 9 years. Two-thirds of wage growth in the most recent quarter came from awards and enterprise bargaining, the direct result of actions taken by this government. Think back to the legislation we passed, the Secure Jobs Better Pay Bill, the Closing Loopholes Bill, both opposed by the opposition, both put forward by Labor and both delivering to Australian workers.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Green, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Since coming to government, the Albanese Labor government has been working to ease cost of living pressures and get wages moving again, including through the Secure Jobs Better Pay and Closing the Loopholes legislation. Unfortunately, those oppers simply saw the title of these bills and knew that they were against it. How are the Albanese government's reforms already helping Australian workers cope with cost of living pressures?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Green. Well, we understand very well that Australians are dealing with cost of living pressures at the moment, and despite the various things our government is doing, people still do need help, and that's exactly why we are working so hard to get wages moving again and delivering Labor's cost of living tax cuts. I'm really pleased to see that our policies are starting to pay off, with the strongest annual wage growth in over 14 years under the Albanese Labor government. The average full-time worker now earns $120 a week more since we came to government, and under Labor's tax cuts plan, they'll get a tax cut of more than $2,100. Wages have been growing at almost double the average compared with when those opposite were in power. The gender pay gap is at 12%, down from 14.1%, the lowest ever level. And this is a direct result of the government's policies to lift wages for workers, including fixing our bargaining system, banning pay secrecy clauses, gender equality and job security as objectives of the Wards and the Fair Work Act.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Green, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, I was very concerned to learn that the Coalition has threatened a targeted package of repeals of workplace reforms. Why is it important that workers maintain the protections afforded to them under Labor's closing the loopholes and secure jobs, better pay reforms?
Thank you, Senator Green. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Green. I was also very concerned about this. I was very concerned to see in a recent interview Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor let the cat out of the bag by saying the opposition would take a, quote, targeted package of repeals of workplace laws to the next election. All I can say about Mr Taylor is fantastic. Great move. Well done, Angus. You let the cat out of the bag. Every Australian worker now has a target on their back as a result of that statement by Mr Taylor, the Shadow Treasurer. We all know that Peter Dutton and the Liberals and the National Party colleagues want to see Australian workers work longer and for less. You've got a clear choice. Labor, earn more, keep more of what you earn. Liberal and National, get paid less and refund most of it back to the tax office instead. Repealing our workplace changes will take your pay packet backwards, risk your job security, make workplaces less safe and do nothing to reduce the gender pay gap. We know that Peter Dutton, the Liberals and Nationals want to keep Australians' wages low, a return to the deliberate design feature they had last time.
And Minister Watt, I do remind you to refer to Mr Dutton by his correct title. Senator Roberts.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for the Environment and Water, Senator Gallagher. Last week, the Minister for the Environment and Water, Tanya Plibersek, MP, stated that Australians were throwing out too many items of clothing and manufacturers should sign up to a government-backed scheme called Seamless to recycle, not dump, used clothes. Clothing can and should be recycled into new clothing and other fibre products. One Australian company operates an upcycling scheme that has dozens of manufacturers, trade linen suppliers, recycling companies and retailers as members, and has taken 100 tonnes of clothing out of landfill. Minister, why is the government reinventing the wheel, creating its own favoured solution and imposing it instead of working with the industry to help them upscale their existing solution?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Roberts for the question, and certainly from what I've seen from the Minister and the work that she has been doing in this space is she has been working with industry and relevant businesses on the development of this policy. That's been critical to the work that she has been doing, and it's certainly been underway for some time. I know there was talk, well, there was a summit and there was talk of a voluntary code, but it is an important part of ensuring that we are, you know, protecting the environment from the amount of waste that is going into landfill. And some of that, and a big contributor of that, is clothing. So I don't know, maybe I've misunderstood your question, Senator Roberts, but where there are manufacturers and industries in place that are already doing this, I think this is about building on that and making it more across the board, particularly for those that perhaps aren't doing that, to make sure that we are lifting our game in relation to recycling and preventing the huge amount of clothing material in particular going into landfill. But if there are manufacturers or businesses that you think are feeling out of the loop on through that consultation, I'm sure the Minister for the Environment would be happy to reach out.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Roberts, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Councils do not currently include clothing on the list of things people can put into a yellow bin. Most suggest giving used clothes to charity shops, very little of which can be resold. Most of that ends up in landfill at the charity shop's expense. Minister, isn't the first step here sorting out the system for recycling and processing, then working with councils and retailers to encourage recycling through yellow bins? Is your government putting the cart before the horse?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, no, I don't accept that, Senator Roberts. I think where we can, we do work with councils, we work with businesses, we'll work with anybody who wants to help protect the environment and reduce the amount of waste going to landfill. And I, from my reading, and I was not here last week, but from my reading of the work that Minister Plibersek was doing, it was about encouraging the voluntary cooperation or involvement of businesses in Seamless in that program to build it from there. So I would think, you know, yes, you have to work with all of those people, including councils that run the recycling facilities, whether it be the tips, whether it be the, you know, here it's called the Green Shed. You know, people donate to Vinnies, the clothing bins. There's all of those options, many of those run by local government. But the Commonwealth Government should provide a leadership role and provide that stewardship and where we can, and work together with everybody involved.
Senator Roberts, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister Plibersek threatened that if the industry did not accept the government's superfluous Seamless, then a 4-cent waste levy should be imposed on clothing manufacturers. Imposed on clothing manufacturers. This proposal will increase the cost of clothing at the checkouts. Minister, will you right now rule out taxing clothing?
Minister Gallagher.
The work that Minister Plibersek has been doing is around working with the industry to reduce the amount of waste. Clothes are cheaper than they have been ever been. I mean, this is part of the problem. Anyone with teenagers, anyone who goes on some of these websites, you can replace your whole wardrobe very cost efficiently because of the nature of people's, you know, people's buying habits and the ability to get clothes from overseas. So we're seeing the average Australian sends almost 10 kilos of clothing waste to landfill every year. So it is a big problem, and it's a problem that we need to work across industry
Minister,
to fix.
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Roberts.
A point of relevance, President. I ask, will the minister now rule out taxing clothing?
The minister is being relevant to your question, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I'm explaining what the government is doing. You might want to take it somewhere else, which we have no plans to do. We are talking about what we are doing now with Seamless, which is working with industry to reduce the amount of clothing going to landfill, and we will work with anybody who wants to work with us on that.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Dunham.
Thank you, President. Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Senator Gallagher. And I ask, does the Commonwealth remain committed to the Marinus project in partnership with the Tasmanian Government as currently agreed?
Thank you, Senator Dunham. Minister Gallagher. Order, order.
Why don't you knock off Eric again?
Senator Watt, Minister Watt. Shush. Order, Senator McKenzie. Minister.
Thank you. Yes, the government does remain committed to Marinus Link. It's a very important project, and the agreement between the Victorian, Tasmanian and Commonwealth governments to deliver the Marinus Link has included an option for the Tasmanian government to sell their share of the project to the Commonwealth since September last year, which has been public. But importantly, this option only comes into effect once the first cable of Marinus is fully operational. This is an important project, which is why we've been getting on through the Minister Bowen, through his work, to reach agreements. Again, an area where we saw the former government vacate the field in making sure that we were preparing our energy system for the future. Marinus is one of those important projects. It remains critically important. It will deliver substantial benefits on both sides of the Tasman, including about 2,400 jobs. There was very little progress made on this project in your decade in government, but I do note the support of those opposite for the project and acknowledging, Madam President. President, I'll drop the matter. We'll provide the affordable, reliable, sustainable electricity that's not just required here in Tasmania, but it is required in the mainland. Our approach is to work closely and in good faith with all states and territories on crucial energy projects and policies, and that is what we will continue to do. Senator Dunnion?
Senator Dunnion, first supplementary.
That's delightful, President. It is Bass Strait, not the Tasman Sea, across which Marinus will go. Does the minister agree with the comments of the Tasmanian Shadow Minister for Energy, Labor's Mr Dean Winter, as reported in the Mercury newspaper today, that Tasmania would be best off getting out of the Marinus project as soon as possible, and further, there's no point throwing good money after bad at a project where more than 90% of the benefit flows to the mainland?
Thank you, Senator Dunnion. Minister Gallagher.
I missed the first bit of that question, President, but no, I think I got the gist of it. But I haven't seen those comments. I mean, I think from the Commonwealth's point of view, we believe this is an important project. It's crucial in terms of our transition to the
Minister
new
Gallagher, energies. Please resume your seat. Order across the chamber. Order. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. The Commonwealth remains committed to it, which is why we have been so working so hard through Minister Bowen and the relevant governments, Victorian, Tasmanian and Commonwealth, to move forward with the project. So it's a really important project, not only from the energy and the benefits that it will produce on that side, but certainly from the jobs.
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Senator Dunnion.
President, on relevance, I asked specifically whether the minister agreed with the comments of the Labor counterpart in Tasmania, Mr Winter. She hasn't gone anywhere near that.
Senator Dunnion, there was a lot of content in your question and the minister is being relevant.
President, I did go to them. I said I haven't seen or heard of those comments, but I understand the question that was being asked. We remain committed to the project, and I am aware of the Tasmanian Labor commitment made in the election campaign.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Dunnion, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Given that Mr Winter's comments largely mirror those of the Tasmanian Greens, seem to be counter to Federal Labor's current agreement on the project, will the minister concede that these comments are reckless and that state Labor's thought bubble policy will deter investment and indeed drive up power prices?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Perhaps Senator Dunnion would like to stand in the Tasmanian elections that are currently underway. Right, OK. Well, you seem very interested in state matters, Senator Dunnion. You're very interested in what state politicians are saying during a state election campaign.
Order.
The Commonwealth government has an agreement in place with the Victorian and Tasmanian government. There is an option for the Tasmanian government to sell their share of the project to the Commonwealth, but only once the first cable of Marinus is fully operational. I don't think it's useful for us to get involved in state campaigns. They'll no doubt traverse a range of issues. The Marinus Link is a project we are committed to. It's going ahead. And of course, we will work with whatever government forms government in Tasmania when that election is complete.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Wish-Wilson.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Resources, Minister Watt. Minister, in the lead-up to the last election, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, made the strongest possible election commitments to stop Petroleum Exploration Project 11, known as PEP 11, from proceeding off the New South Wales coast. Early this month, the New South Wales government announced its plan to stop PEP 11 in its state waters. I understand that PEP 11 proposal is now with the joint Commonwealth State Authority. Can you confirm today that Minister King has the final say on the future of PEP 11? And can you tell coastal communities across New South Wales who want this project stopped, when will this decision be made?
Thank you, Senator Wish-Wilson. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. Thank you, Senator Wish-Wilson. I do recall the commitment that the Prime Minister made and Labor made prior to the election on an issue that I know is of great significance in that part of Australia. Since coming to office, the government has been left with no choice but to concede that Mr Morrison's actions on PEP 11 could not be defended in court, so the government is taking a different approach by governing with competency and in the national interest. I am aware that the New South Wales government will introduce legislation to ban offshore resources development in New South Wales coastal waters, and the bill is intended to ban new offshore resources activity in New South Wales coastal waters. I understand that the New South Wales bill does not ban PEP 11, which is in Commonwealth waters rather than New South Wales coastal waters. So the New South Wales bill, as I say, relates only to offshore resources activity in New South Wales coastal waters. In terms of that bill, it's obviously a matter for the New South Wales government, and I'd refer you to them about this point. But we
Minister
do understand.
Watt, please resume your seat, Senator Wish Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, President. My question was whether Minister King has the final say through the joint state Commonwealth authority, and could the minister tell us when she will make that decision?
Thank you, Senator Wish Wilson. That was part of your question. There was significant ambit there, and the minister is entitled to canvass all parts of your question. He is being directly relevant. Minister, please continue.
Thanks, President. There is a process underway to reconsider PEP 11, but it's not Minister King's intention to provide a running commentary on future decisions of the government. As you say, Senator Wish Wilson, the National Offshore Petroleum Titles Administrator finalised advice on PEP 11 for the New South Wales Government and the Australian Government on the 18th of October 2023. Departments are now reviewing this advice as is appropriate. Any future decision on PEP 11 would first need to be considered by the Government of New South Wales as a member of the Commonwealth New South Wales Offshore Petroleum Joint Authority. A future decision on PEP 11 will only be considered by the Australian Government once the New South Wales Government Minister has considered NOPTA's advice and made a formal decision on PEP 11. But it's not the Government's intention to provide an ongoing commentary on PEP 11.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Wish Wilson, first supplementary.
Minister, PEP 11 venture partners Asset Energy and Bounty Oil and Gas continue to make public statements noting their intention to push on with the project in Commonwealth waters. The Prime Minister visited communities on the northern beaches of Sydney last week, meeting with constituents and discussing issues relating to coastal protection. Minister, did the Prime Minister during these community meetings reiterate your government's pre-election commitment to end PEP 11 once and for all? No ifs, no buts.
Thank you, Senator Wish Wilson. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President, and thanks, Senator Wish Wilson. Well, I obviously wasn't present with the Prime Minister when he made that visit. I was in a range of other places across Australia last week, but not there. But I'm confident that the Prime Minister will have reiterated the position that I've put, which is that we have received advice from NOPTA, the National Offshore Petroleum Titles Administrator. Departments, including in this government, are now reviewing this advice, and we'll make a decision on PEP 11 once the New South Wales Government Minister has considered NOPTA's advice and made a formal decision on PEP 11. Beyond that, it's not our intention to provide an ongoing commentary.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Wish Wilson, second stop.
Minister, the New South Wales Government's been very clear that they're going to stop PEP 11. They've done their bit. Now it's your turn. The Prime Minister said to voters on New South Wales Central Coast, a Labor government I lead will rule out PEP 11 and we will consign it to the dustbin of history where it belongs. 2 years into this term of government, after sitting on this advice for 6 months, I note from your previous answer, will you provide certainty to New South Wales coastal communities on stopping PEP 11 that is causing anxiety, frustration and anger?
Thank you, Senator Wish Wilson. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. Thanks, Senator Wish Wilson. The government very much understands the concerns of many in the local community about this particular project, and that's why we took the position that we did. But it's not my intention to jeopardise an administrative decision which is yet to be made by speculating about what may or may not happen and what decision may or may not be made. I've said repeatedly in answer to your questions that NOPTA has finalised its advice for both the New South Wales and Australian governments. That advice is now being considered by the relevant departments. For me to speculate on what the outcome of that might be would be risky and potentially create avenues for legal action, which we don't want to provide. We want to make this decision properly, in accordance with the law, in accordance with good process, and I have no doubt that a decision will be made as soon as possible.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Women, Senator Gallagher. Last week, the Australian Bureau of Statistics reported a further reduction in the gender pay gap to 12%, delivering the smallest pay gap based on gender on record, a testament to the Albanese government's commitment to women's equality. This achievement comes alongside significant strides in workplace reform and gender equity and demonstrates how the government's policies for women are putting downward pressure on the gender pay gap. Could the minister please outline how these initiatives contribute to the government's broader economic and social goals?
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Pratt for that question, but also I note since we last sat your announcement, Senator Pratt, that you won't contest the next election, and I want to acknowledge the huge amount of work you've done, including in this space, to reduce the gender pay gap for women workers across this country. I know there'll be plenty of time to make other contributions, but I did want to acknowledge that today. Under Labor, the gender pay gap has dropped to a record low, with the ABS reporting last week that the gender pay gap has dropped to 12%. The ABS identified that the reduction is driven by broad-based wages growth, which has been particularly strong for women. The WPI rose by 4.2% in the year to December quarter 2023. This was the highest annual increase in underlying wages growth since the March quarter of 2009. This shows that our efforts to lift wages is working and that our effort to support women's economic equality are working in a very real and tangible way. And that because women's economic equality has been a key priority of our government. Since day one, we have recognised that women's economic equality is a core economic priority. We've been working hard to implement reforms that will have a real practical impact in the lives of Australian women. Tomorrow, WGEA will publish employer-level gender pay gap reports. This is a first for Australia, and it will give employees greater visibility of how their workplaces are performing and increase transparency and focus on employers to accelerate change. This is on top of the reforms we've made to the industrial relations system, reforms the opposition opposed, of course, reforms to fix the bargaining system to get wages moving, particularly in industries dominated by women workers, reforms to change the law to put gender equity at the heart of the Fair Works Commission's decision making, reforms to ban pay secrecy clauses to reduce gender pay discrimination. And we understand that the connection between—
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Pratt, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. With the government securing record pay rises and introducing significant reforms to workplace laws, can the minister please detail the expected long-term benefits of these changes for Australian women, particularly in terms of wage growth, job security and the government's tax cuts? How have the government's achievements that you have outlined helped reduce the gender pay gap?
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Pratt for that question. Well, we've been working hard to improve economic outcomes for women, and while there is still a lot of work to do, we are seeing improvements, welcome improvements. Women are not only benefiting from record wages growth, but also women's workforce participation reached a record high of 63% in November. There were 333,000 more women employed in January than there were in May 2022, a 5.2% increase. This means more women are earning, and with the narrowing pay gap, their work is being better valued. We're also investing directly to close those gaps through supporting increasing the minimum wage and funding pay rises in industries like aged care. And with Labor's tax cuts, 100% of women will get working women will get a tax cut, and 90% of women will be better off than they would have been under the former Prime Minister Morrison's tax plan.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Pratt, second supplementary.
Thank you. Tomorrow, in an Australian first, the Workplace Gender Equality Agency will publish employer gender pay gaps. How does this initiative aim to drive action towards closing this gap, and what are the expected outcomes in terms of workplace equality and transparency?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, President. I thank Senator Pratt for that supplementary. And can I say it is an important publication of data tomorrow by WGEA, the first time that gender pay gaps of employers with 100 or more employees will be published. Can I also acknowledge the huge amount of work that's gone in from WGEA, from all the staff, led by, of course, Ms. Mary Woolridge, have done an incredible job to put us in the position where that data will be released tomorrow. Data is a powerful tool for accountability and change, and this is not about concentrating, I think, on those who aren't where the gap is the biggest. It's about making sure all businesses, where they can, are making efforts to close the gender pay gap, that they're understanding what's happening in their business, and that we are using all the levers available to us to make gender equality, certainly when it comes to pay, but in other areas, a real opportunity in Australia.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Hume.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister for Finance, Senator Gallagher. Minister, I refer to a media report and a statement issued by the Department of Finance on the 21st of February 2024 regarding the Department's inappropriate disclosure of the commercially sensitive pricing information for up to 400 businesses. Recent reports from Innovation Australia Online claim that up to 200 of these impacted businesses have yet to sign any confidentiality agreement to prevent the disclosure of pricing information. Minister, when were you informed that this disclosure had occurred?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. I thank Senator Hume for the question. Thank you, President. And this, you know, this is a really disappointing issue. That commercially sensitive information from the MATS panel has again been inadvertently disclosed by the Department of Finance in an administrative error. I would have to check the date, but it was around the 19th or 20th of February that I was advised, and Finance had certainly been in touch with my office. I was travelling last week, so I would just have to check that. I think on the 21st of February, the Secretary issued a statement on the disclosure of information, and I think the next day the Secretary also announced a review into what has, you know, how these two MAPS panel disclosures have occurred. I've spoken again on my return from overseas with the Secretary about the work that has been done, including individually contacting suppliers and working very closely with them through the department to seek undertakings from them. I understand that many, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that there were a number where the email hadn't been opened and the email was deleted after contact by the Department of Finance. But I can tell you the department is doing everything it can, you know, to ensure that we minimise the impact on suppliers and that certainly that this never happens again. I would also say there is work being done to support staff that have been involved in this and the inquiry, you know, will get to the bottom of what has led to the error in disclosure of
this
sensitive information.
Senator Hume, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Minister, the Department of Health reportedly disclosed commercially sensitive pricing information back in November 2023, and at that time you provided assurances that this couldn't happen again. So I ask you, Minister, following that bungle in 2023, how did you satisfy yourself that the issues within the government had been fixed?
Thank you, Senator Hume. Minister Gallagher.
I think your question said the Department of Health, but you're referring to the earlier disclosure on MAPS. Yeah. So, yes, there has been two disclosures, inappropriate disclosures, on the MAS panel, as I recall it. Look, I had a number of discussions with the Secretary of Finance. Ms Wilkinson did a lot of work with the relevant area. They're dealing with these matters all the time, and I was confident in my briefings with the department and with what the internal inquiry that was conducted, or the internal investigation that was conducted, that steps had been taken to make sure this wouldn't happen again. Obviously, that it has, and that's why the inquiry by Mr Manthorpe is so important. I don't want to get ahead of that, so we'll wait for that inquiry to be held. I understand that it's only going to be a matter of weeks.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Hume, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Minister, your government has twice damaged confidence in the Commonwealth's ability to work with the private sector. Can you answer for this chamber what number of organisations have signed those confidentiality agreements, and have you sought advice on the potential legal liability created by this breach? If not, why not?
Thank you, Senator Hume. Minister.
Look, I have been briefed on all aspects of it, so I'll leave it at that. I can't tell you, I can't give you a figure of those that have signed confidentiality requirements. I note that a number hadn't opened the email, but I will see if there's further.
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Senator Hume.
Sorry, can I ask the Minister, if she doesn't know, can she take that on notice?
Senator Hume, that's not a point of order. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. I was just going to say I will see if there's any further information I can bring forward to the chamber, but obviously we are having this inquiry to get to the bottom of it, and I'm sure that whether it's, you know, I can confidentially or otherwise brief the Shadow Minister for Finance, I will. I would say that our engagement with business has been very strong. You know, yes, it is very regrettable that this error has been made.
Order.
Look, I'm being, you know.
Order.
Look, I'm trying to be helpful. Okay, fine. I'll see what I can take on notice, and I would ask that all further questions be placed on the notice paper. Yeah.